Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This is episode 4 of the 2024 preseason draft season. And I am Vlad Sedler at RotoGut. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host at Boom 62. His name is Jason Anthony. Jason, you just got back from somewhere not California, and I'm sure your arms are tired.
Was not flying myself, but on a nice big plane. Just got back from Dallas. Excited to be talking some baseball tonight with you, Vlad.
I cannot wait. This is going to be a fun episode. We're going to go a little bit longer than usual, and that's because we're talking outfielders. There are a lot of outfielders to cover. We're going to run through, for the most part, the guys that go within the first 20 rounds of 15 teamers, so the top 300, and we'll touch on a few of our end gamers as well. But we will keep cruising through everything. By the way, this podcast is presented to you by Underdog Fantasy. Just a couple of things that we are doing here. We are about, 3 weeks? Is it 3 weeks away from Las Vegas?
I think 3 weeks on the dot, Vlad. Pretty fun times.
Yeah, it's coming up way too quickly. I'm going to do my annual trek with Genstad and Erickson and Tim Schuler, where I will drive and get to Genstad's house. We will all hit the road. Erickson and Schuler will pile in their large golf bags along with Scott's, because they always go golfing there in Vegas. I'll squeeze in there somehow, and we'll have our ADP list printed out, or VDP, or whatever all that we have, and we'll talk. It's always a fun time, the process of just getting there.
I might have to fly down to LA and drive over with you guys.
Dude, come on in, dude. Oh, we'd love it. It'd be fun. So a couple of things, fun things we have going on in Vegas. If you happen to be going there for the main event or for those festivities at NFBC, we are going to do a happy hour hosted by us. We'll take care of some beer buckets and some apps in the beginning. And so Jason and Jake Kuchek will be there, but they both have 4 o'clock drafts. This starts 3:30 on Friday. It's going to be at the Mirage. So you guys, I don't know, you have a big draft on Friday at 4:00. So I'm guessing you won't come for too long.
No, I'll stop in, say hi, but I'll probably be there till about 3:40 and then wander over to the draft room and get ready for it.
And that's an auction or a draft?
It is an auction. It's a big boy. It's been repping for it already. It's the most exciting one of the year. Going to have a beer, get mentally prepared, and then go draft and bid on some players.
Yes. Can't wait. That'll be fun. Todd Whitestone and Mike Mager will be there with us. They are not drafting at 4:00, so they'll come and hang out. So definitely stop by if you're in town. Other than that, we're going to have a couple of more live stream drafts going on the FTN YouTube channel. I will do a Vlad OC. Hopefully, Jason, you can join me there. Maybe we can switch a little bit, do some of the hosting duties. And then Eric Cross will do a Beat Eric Cross League as well. So we will let you know when those come up. Outside of that, we're just cranking away with the, updating all the rankings and the projections, and all that stuff is downloadable. So definitely check it out, ftnfantasy.com. And again, still promo code has stuck. It's still the 5% one. It's Seager5. Hopefully it does not expire before Corey Seager actually comes back and starts playing. Have we heard anything about that? Is he any word over the last week?
Radio silence from what I've seen. I guess no news is good news when you're recovering, but no setbacks at least, right?
Yeah. That's definitely a good thing. And then last thing, really that's it. I mean, we're just going to get to it. I mean, Mike Mager's got some fun stuff coming up. He just wrote our first 12-team OC ADP market report. That article is actually free on our site, ftnfantasy.com. And he's got something cool planned next week, a main event preview article. So straight from his dome onto the paper and pen. Well, the internet. And then, Lucas Beery and Jake Kuchek continue to produce the twice a week spring training report. And then I'll actually have a big announcement. So something that we're working on over here. I will give you no more information than that, but it is really, really exciting. I'll be sure to share that with you next week, possibly on the show. All right, man, let's do it. Let's talk some outfielders. Tier one, I mean, Acuna, is there much to discuss here?
Nope.
Yeah, I mean,
he's pretty good.
He's good. He was the best ever in a fantasy season last year. $68.50 per the Razzball Player Rater. Massive, almost, you know, $20 over the next guy, which is his own teammate, Matt Olson, in terms of standard fantasy roto 5x5 value. The only thing is, like, okay, there is no only thing. It's Ronald Acuna. He's at the top there. But do some, I don't know, are you just seeing a little bit of bullishness out there on him? Like, why is a guy that, listen, he was amazing, but he hit almost like, what, 340? And he's a career 280 guy. But it, I mean, why is that all of a sudden like his new base, or why is 310 even his new base? I mean, like, our projections are a little down on VDP. It's closer to 300, which even that is pretty good. I think most people think he'll hit more than over 300, but I mean, could have just been a big batting average outlier. And what's the reasonable expectation? Like, you know, 80% of last year overall on his stats? Like, what are we looking at here?
Yeah, I think if you get 80% of his stats, you're still going to love it. The crazy part about his season last year was his expected batting average was 356. He cut his strikeout rate down to 11.5% from 23.5% the previous year. Yeah. That's unheard of as far as skills growth, and then still kept all the power metrics. So I am fascinated about how much he's going to go for in the auctions. I think currently in the online auctions, he's going for mid to upper 60s, which I don't know how you can build a team doing that, but that's what it's happening. So when we get to Vegas and the big auctions, I'm excited to see what he goes for and how those teams build around him.
And by saying you're excited to see how he goes for and not to give away your strategy, but it looks like you might not be involved in that.
I will be backing out around $48.
That's fair.
I'm giving away all the secrets here.
I'm, you know, I'm doing a draft, an auction in Vegas too. And I just, the same, I don't think I can do it because, I mean, knock on wood, just like one little ankle tweak or hamstring or beamed or, you know, something in the field that happens to him. And it's just no bueno, right? I mean, it's just so much to invest in a single pick. I've seen him go in the low 70s in some of these 150 auctions. That just is, he's the best, but it's bewildering to me.
Yeah, one guy on your fantasy baseball team when you're starting 14 hitters and 9 pitchers, I just don't see it possible allocating that much of a budget to it. It's almost the fantasy football mindset where one player is going to carry your entire team. I don't think it works in baseball, but somebody proved me wrong.
Yeah, and then so like even if you spent $65, that's a quarter of your budget on one of your 23 starters. So that's a little too much for my blood.
Agreed.
The rest of that first round is, I mean, it's a loaded first round. There are like 9 outfield eligible guys. And that includes Mookie Betts, who's going to be eligible at second. Julio Rodriguez had some sort of, he's supposed to be fine and going to play on Saturday, but he had some, I saw a D next to his name in NFBC. He's got like a hand thing or something like that. I don't know if you saw it.
I did. I think I read he was going to be back in the lineup today or tomorrow. Mm. So it was minor, but something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. And for the most part, I mean, I'm now at the point where I'm pretty comfortable with Bobby Witt second. It's just a personal feel, and it's a complete flip from where I was in December. And they've always been close to me. And we're talking about Bobby Witt Jr., not an outfielder, but you know, with that second overall pick, for someone like myself who sometimes finds myself having to draft a stolen base heavy type person later in the draft, it's almost better for me to start off with a little bit of a higher base. So I will do that with Witt. Julio, I think, will be a little bit more balanced. I think things like, oh, his ballpark affects his upside, I'm not worried about that. The guy's still going to produce, you know, 200 plus run RBI. But again, it's not going to be on the level of like a Mookie Betts, right? Like, you're looking at my VDP, you see Mookie Betts just like a value wise, just a couple dollars below where he is most places, and also a little bit down in the rankings. And that's probably, I'm probably wrong on that for some reason, because you're looking at a guy who basically is, you know, we have projected to lead the league in runs and hit almost 40 homers yesterday. And just because he steals 12 to 15 compared to Julio's, you know, 30-ish, 35, I mean, Maybe I'm wrong in that assessment. Do I need to be drafting Mookie Betts there at like 3, 4, 5?
I mean, I think the speed is kind of what you just nailed right there. The 20 to 25 steals extra you're getting with a Julio or Corbin Carroll or even a Kyle Tucker. Maybe not 20, but 15, 20. Those matter. And it's harder to build a team. Like, I love Aaron Judge, but I'm having a really hard time building a team around him, not getting speed early. Because you come back in two, there's really not a lot of great speed options that have good batting average. So you have the power, you have the runs, you got batting average, but where do you get your steals? But we talked a couple episodes ago about leaving the first two rounds without any speed. So I would say you're a little low on Mookie, especially adding Ohtani behind him. He, I think, led the league in runs last year, and now he's adding Ohtani. So I don't know how he gets worse. So I would probably, if me drafting, I would be looking at him or Corbin Carroll kind of ahead of Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, and right now, I mean, like, just the way the values shake out, it's Julio stands out a little bit over Kyle Tucker and Carroll and VDP dollars. So Julio is like 45, and then you've got Tucker, Carroll at 40, and then Judge, Betts, Soto, Yordan, and Tatis are all in that like $37 to $39 bucket. So we're really splitting here. It's a matter of how you want to build from that spot, how you want to start, and then also avoiding the landmine, right? Like, these are all amazing players. We don't know who that will be, but historically speaking, that first round, we've seen the study from, you know, Ron Chandler, Baseball HQ. It's something like I always forget, but it's like 45% of first rounders fail to even, you know, reach even second round value. Not flat out busts. A flat out bust would be, you know, somebody like Ellsbury a few years ago, and he was a first round pick like a decade ago, just injured, I think, on opening day and just pretty much out for the year. So something like that is extreme. But it's, you know, somehow half of these guys, or maybe this year it'll be only a third of them, or who knows, aren't going to get there. So there are some landmines in this group. We just don't know who they are yet.
It's a pretty crazy stat with all the research that is done going into the first round that with that many percentage is quote unquote a bust or doesn't return value. You know, out of this first group, is there any fades or a slight fade for you?
I'm starting to, we do so much research analysis. We're so dialed in, and it's a good thing to kind of step away sometimes and let that instinct sort of sink back in. We've been doing this for so long, a couple decades. And sometimes sorry for the statement, trust the gut a little bit. And the gut is wrong sometimes, of course. And I don't just mean my gut, it's your gut, anyone's, but man, I don't know if I'm into Corbin Carroll at the four. And I know the stolen bases are nice. I know everything is nice about Corbin Carroll, but I don't know what it is. It's partially whatever. The shoulder thing from last year is not a big deal. I don't think it'll affect him that much. There's just something about him that I can't put my finger on. And then I had a little bit of bias, confirmation bias fill in when Mike Mager's article came out reviewing KDS strategy and draft mapping. And he ran a study over the last several years at where winners come from. And they don't all come from one. I think like 11 has the most like overall titles, but the least amount of success randomly is, I mean, well, it's not random, but it's the four pick. And so obviously that has no bearing on the fact that it's Carroll, right? Or there's no really true relationship there, but I start to let enough of those things sink into me that I'm like, I don't know. Like, maybe Mookie just feels safer and I pass on the bases there.
Well, when you're doing a main event and dropping a large entry fee, even if the shoulder's not a big deal, I think it is a big deal. One wrong swing, it's kind of like Tatis last year coming back. And I know he was suspended, but the shoulder injuries are scary. What that does to power, and then if there's an issue in the season, you can't get on first base to steal second if you're not hitting because your shoulder's messed up. So I kind of feel the same thing. I don't know if I'm passing on him for Tucker or Betts, but it's a little hesitation. It's not a excited pick like it was when you first started drafting this season.
And there was an interesting thing when something on Twitter, when people were talking about, it was a conversation about Soto and Judge. And someone brought up Kyle Tucker, and they said, well, I don't think he's got enough upside for the first round. And I counter that statement because Kyle Tucker, first of all, you don't need upside in the first round. You just need, you don't want to mess up the first round. You want the guy that is healthy, the guy that's has all the things that Tucker has. He plays in tremendous team context. He's now going to hit fourth. He's got a new manager there with, you know, he's going to have Altuve, Yordan, and Bregman ahead of him. He is in a very efficient stolen base guy, right? Like, what was it we were talking about in one of the threads, how he isn't that fast. Like, his sprint speed is mediocre, but he picks his spots so well. He's such a good base stealer. And then he's got the power, and he's, you know, he's still relatively young. There's a lot going on here. So I love Kyle Tucker in that way. Maybe 10 years ago, Vlad would be like, ah, give me the hot young guy here. But, you know, not here, not like this.
You're maturing in front of our eyes, Vlad. I think we were talking the sprint speed for Tucker's 33rd percentile, which is really slow for a guy that stole basically 60 bases the last 2 years. He seems like a really smart base runner, though, or he's not doing it with speed. He's doing it with skill. So I'm not worried about the speed slowing down. I think you're looking 30-30. You don't have the upside of a Judge or Tatis, where you can dream on a 60 home run season from Judge or a 40-40 home run or 40-40 season from Tatis. But 30-30 safety, it's pretty good when you're writing that in the first round pick. I think that's a mistake so many drafters do when they first get in the main event, is I have to win every pick. And it's a fallacy. You just have to not miss. It's more about the safety of these picks and then hit on the later picks that really get the value. Because like you said, you're trying to avoid that landmine that doesn't produce first or second round value.
And Tucker, over the last three full seasons, is averaging 30 homers a season. 104 ribbies. I mean, he's strong. There's a lot to like about him. There's nothing wrong with a little boring in the first round. Speaking of not boring, Juan Soto, Aaron Judge playing together. Remember, we were talking last week how this Yankees team scored the fifth fewest runs in baseball last season. BDP projections have them top five. I don't think it's much of a stretch. I mean, this is kind of the range in which they've been in. And last year they were running out guys like guys we didn't even know, or guys off the street, or like, you know, the ghost of Jake Bowers. So this is, you know, they got everybody back. Glaber's amazing. Gleyber Torres. They've got a lot of talent in this lineup, and they can get it done. And Soto should help propel them.
Yeah. Do you have a preference between Judge and Soto?
They're so different. I feel like in an online championship, a 12 teamer, where there's like a scenario where Judge kind of falls to the end of that first round, like 10 to 12, I'm more likely to stab him up there. And in a main event, I just like the Soto feels much less risky to me. Obviously you're not going to get the 60 home run upside that Judge can provide you. But Soto can hit 40. I think he absolutely can there, and playing half his games in that park, I think he could score 120 plus runs. I think he can hit 300. There's a lot to like about Juan Soto. One interesting thing, I remember, so Phil Dussault, who we know is like, he's just so freaking good in fantasy baseball, possibly the best there is. And I just remember last year or 2 years ago, him just like not really loving Soto. And it's just the fact that he does walk at a 20% clip and sometimes just doesn't, he's not driving, you know, he just kind of taking the walks, and he doesn't really run all that much. And so he's just losing a lot of those. They're not losing the plate, but they're just like nil, right? They go nowhere. Maybe, yeah, he'll score some runs, which is nice. And that'll happen more often with Soto, but I don't know. I'm not really thinking about that too much. I like him here.
Well, it's not an OBP league. It's a batting average league. So those walks really do not do as much good. You'd like to see somebody put the ball in play. As far as Judge goes, is there anything scarier than your first round pick having to do a constant toe maintenance for the rest of his career? That was the news that came out last week. So I can see his ADP dropping a bit, but I mean, his stats last year, he had a 27.5% barrel percentage. Mm-hmm. that is absurd. 64% hard hit. The guy, if he can stay on the field, is incredible. I actually have him projected for a higher batting average than Juan Soto, which surprised me when I did the research. But there's a huge risk, and there's no speed. If you're talking a toe injury, those 8 to 10 chippy steals Judge had the last couple of years, those are probably gone. You're probably looking, you know, 2 or 3 maybe, and Soto can chip in 10 to 12. So that might be the difference maker.
I think the difference maker for me is just, there's some sort of injury, something I have to manage for the rest of my career. That's scary to me. That's not something I necessarily want to go for. It's the balance of the massive upside in the first round versus possibly just not having a guy play, like missing chunks of time with an IL. Oh, the toe's acting up again. Like, I don't think I want to deal with that. I think the common sense me will be saying, don't do it. This is exactly what you're kind of, you know, sort of working towards. If you're trying to be more risk averse, and especially in the first round, you want to practice what you preach. Don't draft Aaron Judge in the first round, even though it's like, it's right. It's him, Yordan Alvarez, and Otani. Those are like the three sort of best just overall hitters, you know, stat cast, but it's like just hitters, right? Baseball. Power
and they all have three question marks behind them, with Yordan's knees, Judge's toes, and Otani's elbow. But they all have their payoff. So it's kind of, you know, they say common sense is a superpower. How much of that superpower do we have? Because it's easy to get caught in that.
So then that leaves us with just super quick touching on Yordan Alvarez and Fernando Tatis. Where are you on those guys? Am I just like off the mark here? I've got him below ADP. I've not drafted any Fernando Tatis shares. I haven't last year either. I hope it's not like some sort of subconscious bias when it was, 2 years ago or something, when I had a first overall pick. And I think we were always taking Acuna, and Tatis was occasionally a first round pick, and I mixed it up with a Tatis, and then he just got hurt and was done. So I hope that's not like a reason that I'm doing it, but I think the whole team context thing is now, the concern about that is going away, especially with Machado looking like he's going to be probably okay. And then you got Bogarts there, and you know, they lost Soto, but it's really not that bad. Like this Jackson Merrill kid stepping up. And then maybe they sign JD Martinez, kind of seems like he might be a fit. So I don't think team context is an issue. And correct me if I'm wrong, if there's anyone else in the league that can go 40-40, which is a very rare thing over the last 2-3 decades, it's probably him.
Yeah, there's very few guys you can see being the number one pick next year, and he's one of them. Again, going back to the shoulder injury, his power last year was sapped. He went from a 21% barrel rate to just over a 10% barrel rate. I mean, literally cut in half. Does that power bounce back this year, another year removed from the shoulder injury? I think it might. What is he now? Is he a, you know, 25-30 homer guy? Does he have that 40-45? You know he's going to run. You know, the team context scares me a little more than it does you. I think that team, if it goes sideways, can go up in flames pretty quick. And what does that look like for Tatis? Does he sit out? Does he pout? Or does he kind of be a leader and push through that? I mean, there's a lot of narratives there that we don't know as fantasy baseball players, but the 40-40 upside is real. It's a little concerning looking at the power numbers coming off a shoulder injury last year.
And then you add in the risk of Yordan Alvarez kind of in the same boat as Judge. I mean, yeah, we have him lower. FTN has him lower with the projections and as far as plate appearances, which is reasonable. I think it's like the low 600s. I don't think many expect him to just kind of make it through an entire season. And I mean, if he's hitting second and he plays all season and he gets 700 plate appearances, do you have any idea what that would look like? That'd be like Matt Olson numbers from last year, plus a good average.
It'd be scary, but I never have gotten so concerned with a manager saying a player is going to play the field more.
Yeah, I did. We don't want it.
Just play DH, please. He's like the Eloy. Just hit. That's all we want. We don't need you playing left field. But the guy is just an amazing hitter, and if he can play 150, 155 games batting second in that lineup, you're talking just enormous production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm talking like, I mean, 700 plate appearances. The man's going to hit 55 bombs,
and if you think hit, he has that power, like it's more of a line drive hitter. He doesn't seem like he's got the 50 home run bat. I know he hasn't played a full season, but it seemed like he'd max about 40, but it's still pretty good either way.
I mean, as far as, I mean, he is one of the top three bats just as far as looking at StatCat's metrics, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, last 2 years, barrel rates of 18%, 21%. Hard hit rate is elite, 93 miles per, I'm sorry, yeah, hard hit, 53% last year, 60% in 2022. Average exit velocity in the 94, 95 range. Max exit velocity, 117. I mean, it's, yeah, launch angle's perfect, right in the teens, the mid-teens. Yeah, I see like 55 plus. But again, risk, right? All these, we kind of unintentionally just create, we just talked about this entire first round. And the more we talk about it, it looks, it's scary. It's almost all risky. So after all that, my thought is, man, give me Tucker or Mookie Betts and I'm happy.
There's something to that. Time to move Mookie up in the VDP.
I think it is. I think it is. Let's talk round two. I'm sorry, tier two, three. So this is like, there's one guy in round two, basically. It's, there's just one outfielder there, and it's Michael Harris. And then we can talk about him with the round three, four guys. And that's Luis Robert, Adolis Garcia, Randy Arozarena. So first on Harris, what are your thoughts?
He feels like the most polarizing player in the draft. You hear people that say it's a easiest click in the second round ever, and then you have people that won't touch him until the third round. I love all the metrics. The guy did not take a walk the last month and a half of the season, I think, though. That scares me.
That's true.
He does really not going to get above sixth or seventh in the batting order, which scares me for a second round pick. But you're also talking a 295 plus hitter with 25 plus steals. What are the homers? Are they 20? Is it 30? You know, the runs and RBIs have not been very good the first 2 years, mainly because batting at the bottom of the lineup. But I only have him projected, I think, for 82 runs and 75 RBIs. And maybe I'm off, but I don't know if I like that for a second round pick.
That's the scary part. So if you are just like a paper drafter and you're populating your own projections or aggregates or whatever you do, even VDP, you pop in Harris at a reasonable conservative plate appearance. That is basically assuming he's going to hit sixth for a while, maybe some ninth, maybe he'll play a little bit at hitting second or whatever. It's not going to be that high, and the counting categories don't look very good with it. And then if you are a spreadsheet drafter, you populate that, you're not going to like where it looks, because other teams around you are going to just have more counting cats to begin with. But I have a really strong feeling that Michael Harris is going to force his way in. I've been talking about this for a while. It could just be absolute, again, indigestion, but like hitting second instead of Albies, like to the point where they realize, oh, wait, this guy should be hitting second. And I know it's weird because he doesn't walk. So that's probably, I know that's probably the concern, but the guy still gets on base because he hits nearly 1,000 plate appearances in his career, and he's hitting near 300. He's got a 47% hard hit rate last season. He stole 20 bags in each of the last two seasons. And to me, the most important thing that I've seen is the concerns that we had this time last year about his splits and how he can't hit lefties. It completely flipped. He was near even against lefties and righties. A 114 WRC plus against lefties, 115 against righties. 343 WOBA against lefties, 345 against righties. And then a little foreshadowing, he goes ahead and hits a couple of bombs in his first couple of games here. I know spring training doesn't matter, but there's still like a little something to it. So I like it, but you're almost betting on something future to happen that we haven't seen yet. And a lot of people don't like that.
Yeah. You're betting on the come of a prospect getting better. It's a pretty big, you know, reach, I think, to see him batting second with Albies and Acuna there. I think it's going to take an injury no matter how good he is. I just don't see those two giving up the spot. So can he get up to fifth, sixth? You have Ozuna, you have Riley, you have you've got such a stacked lineup. Olson, and then you got Murphy. So maybe sixth, but I think it's a pass for me. Now, if it gets to the end of the second round and you're on the wrap and you compare it with Acuna and a pitcher, maybe. But it's just not the profile I'm really looking for. It's kind of a show me. The batting order, show me that even further breakout. I love what you're talking about, the lefty-righty split. So that definitely is skills growth there.
And other thing other part of it is roster construction too. So if you are in a 15 teamer and you do, I mean, if he's usually going around that 1-2 turn around like an ADP of 29, that's where some pitchers are going. But will those pitchers even go there at that point? At that point, by the time we get to mains, I mean, we're already seeing it. The Wheelers, Gausmans, like these guys aren't there. So if you're not comfortable with like a Kirby or a Pablo Lopez, and by the way, Yamamoto is getting there. That, I mean, he is like, it's not just because he was at, on the day of this recording, 228, that he was drafted, you know, around pick 23 and pick 28. I just kind of see him going that way. So that's another part of the thinking.
Your Dodgers blue is bleeding out, Vlad.
No, it's not me. This is where, like, it's literally, a Dodger pitcher, dominant, people love the helium. Why wouldn't he go at, like, it's only a 41 ADP now. Why wouldn't he go at, like, 31, 32?
Yeah, he's going to be going in the second round in 3 weeks in the mains.
Yeah. So then the other guys here, these are some big power bats, obviously, Luis Robert, Garcia, Arozarena. You have a favorite in this group, or do you like all three?
I actually, the one I like least is Robert, or Robert, I guess. His name changes every year. but we, Modica and I had him last year, and he had his career year that he was healthy. I'm worried about the health. I'm worried about the team context. Guy's bat is, he mashes, but I don't see anything better than it was last year. If he reproduces it, great. I just not taking that chance come, you know, early third round. I do like Adelis and Arozarena, different reasons. Arozarena's skills really solidified last year. He's going to chip in, not even chip in, he's going to throw in 20 to 25 steals, even though he gets caught 20 times. Power metrics look good, and Adelis just rakes. That guy keeps cutting the strikeout percentage. He's down to 27.7 last year. He just keeps improving, which I love in a hitter, in a great lineup. So in third round, I'm definitely looking at one of those two guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not into any of the three of them per se. I feel like I want to get out on Luis Robert now, after last season and being heavy on him. And what it comes down to is a lot of things are like almost feel, right? You play fantasy for so long, when you're really in tune to the league, you do realize that things like vibe, as silly as it sounds, call me crazy, call me the spiritual guru, but these things like matter. If your team stinks and you're losing every day and you're already somebody that has, you know, some discipline issues, and I know Robert has had them, that's not really an environment that he's going to necessarily thrive in. And add in the multiple injuries over the last few years, we got the health season out of him. So I'm not interested. I don't really want any White Sox bats, unless maybe I don't have a utility and it's pick 240 and Eloy Jimenez is there, then yeah, sure. But other than that, I'm not into these White Sox bats. And then Adolis Garcia, I've got no problem with him. Every year I'm, we talk ourselves out of reasons to draft him, and every year he proves us wrong, and we saw him in the spotlight in the playoffs. But call me crazy, but again, on the vibes tip, there's just something a little bit I don't know if I love about Texas. It's like the, and this is crazy again, and stop me if I'm off the rails here. It's like Simeon's always, he never misses a game. And then everyone just expects him to all of a sudden have like a full season without worry. I mean, something doesn't feel right here. And again, I'm not trying to doom the Rangers here. Then you got Seager, a little bit of injuries history over the last few years, already out. We're not sure. Adolis Garcia had that shoulder injury in the playoffs. You got a couple of rookies there. Evan Carter, who can't hit lefties. Wyatt Langford, will he, won't he make the club? I know they got Donnie Ecker there, but I don't know. There's something about it. Maybe they just get off to a slow start and they end up being fine, but maybe I'm just overthinking it here. Maybe I'm really in my head here.
That isn't the Vlad Hex. I don't know what is. I think I'm going to go put a bet on the under on the Rangers now.
Yeah, and then Randy Arozarena, he's fine. You know, you take him around there. I think there are just some outfielders I like that go in like the 70 to 100 range, like just as much. They populate just as much. But he's fine. And I saw he bulked up. Does that change anything for you?
Best shape of his life. How many times have we heard that this preseason? But he is. He's pretty yoked.
He's jacked.
Yeah. Well, he gets caught half the time when he runs anyway, so I don't know if that's going to prevent him from running. Could add a couple extra homers. It doesn't impact me positively or negatively.
The next group, this is like rounds 4, 5, 6. These are players that go up until like pick 90 or so. So 60 to 90. Let's say rounds 5 or 6, 60 to 90. I mean, we know the guys here. It's Mike Trout. As long as he's healthy, we're going to see him keep climbing. He was going in the 80s in draft champions. Now he's got an ADP of 71. Now it's going to be in the 60s. We've seen him go in the 40s and 50s in 12-team OCs. So that was kind of inevitable, right? The Mike Trout helium. He hasn't done anything yet.
He's still Mike Trout. The name's going to carry a lot of weight. He's a fade for me, though. His bat-to-ball skill just keeps declining, it looks like, as far as the swing and miss. K-rate at 29%. It's not the Mike Trout we know and love. He still hits the ball hard, but in that lineup, with the amount of games he's going to miss, I just don't see the payoff for the draft cost.
Cody Bellinger signed with the Cubs. He fell a little bit when people were unsure where he was going to land. He landed pretty much in the most predictable place, which is back in Chicago. I think the comfort is a good thing for him. I would be out on Bellinger anywhere else, but I would draft Bellinger or like around his ADP if it happens to fit my team here in his second year in Chicago. I think it can be, I don't know about better. Like, I don't think he's going to hit over 300 again. I don't think anybody does. But 25 homers with 15 to 20 steals and a whole mess of runs in RBI, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, he's going to produce a lot of runs in RBIs. The hard hit stuff still scares me with him. He's going to need the wind blowing out at Wrigley to get to the home runs again. I think his barrel rate was only 31%, or hard hit rate was only 31%, and the barrel rate was only 6%. That is so he sacrificed a lot of power for some batting average, which, you know, you don't mind if he's going to hit 300, but I think he's more of a 270 hitter. But I agree with you. Chicago was the best place. The narrative there, the comfortability for Cody in home park, home city. I think he's going to be fine. Just really not somebody I'm interested in.
Some young, talented guys with probably a little, well, one of them is helium, or I think is going to get some helium. That's Jazz Chisholm, as long as he looks healthy. I think he is somebody that he fits my I know I shouldn't, but I'm starting to get into it phase. He's somebody that I didn't touch last year. I didn't want any part of him. And for some reason, I'm kind of feeling it. It's sometimes like the every other year type of thing with me for certain guys. Like I did it with Luis Robert, where it was, you know, I'm out. Wait, this year I'm going to be healthy. And again, it's just luck. We just happen to get luck. But eventually that happens. Eventually Carlos Correa has his healthy season as he did a few years ago. Now he's back to being injured again. Eventually Aaron Judge had that healthy season where he played. So I think maybe that could be the year for Jazz Chisholm. And obviously upside there, that's, you know, 35, 30, 35, something like that. It's very possible. So him, Nolan Jones, ADP of 55. Right now Nolan Jones goes like 20 picks higher than Chisholm. I that's fine, I guess. And then the other hype guy in this sort of range is Josh Lowe. And we know Josh Lowe, kind of what he is, but he's pretty much just going to play against righty. So he's not going to quite get the plate appearances. And I think that's fine, right? He just, when he's in the lineup, he's hitting around guys like Arozarena and Paredes. And you just know there will always be somebody for him to drive in.
Yeah, I think that feeling on Jazz is actually indigestion this year for you, though, Vlad. Be careful. You know, anytime a player models himself after Acuna, it's exciting. And that's what Jazz does. He wants to be Ronald Acuna. So when he plays, he's going to run. He's going to hit homers. He's going to bat flip. He's going to Euro step. But his skills are a little scary to me. The 31% strikeout rate, zone contact at under 75%. There's a lot of swing and miss, but there's a lot of excitement. And if he does play, say, 140 games, you're going to get 35, 40 steals and 25 homers. I think the batting average could be a big sink. Nolan Jones is a big unknown. The BABIP was so inflated at Coors, but that's what Coors does to BABIP. You would think the Guardians could have used a good outfielder like Nolan Jones, but that's a story for another day. He's polarizing. Is expected batting average is 50 points lower than what his actual batting average was. So really, he'd have to fall a little bit for me. I am interested in Josh Lowe a bit. I think Tampa might be sneaky bad this year, and I don't think I've said that in a long time. And I don't know if they're going to be able to platoon Lowe. And so if he does get some at-bats against lefties, I was talking to Matt Modica about it. His WRC plus against lefties, I think, was about 96 last year. So he wasn't a total dud. He only got about 60 plate appearances, though. If he can get his plate appearances up from 480 to, 470 to 530 by playing against some weak lefties, and the numbers could grow. But there's a platoon risk for a guy you're taking in the fifth round. So that's pretty scary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost an assumed platoon at this point, and we'll be right. It's like the opposite. We'll be lucky if he's not in a platoon. Well, I don't know, because if he's worked out last year, that was a concern. Like, oh, he's in a platoon, but wait, we got to keep putting him in the lineup because he keeps scoring runs and he keeps stealing bases. And yeah, you're right. That was his WRC plus range was 97 against lefties, and then the power. The ISO wasn't that bad. It was not that off from his against righties. It was 190, which is obviously pretty solid. So he can hit the lefties. The average would take a dip, I think. But and I wanted to I was curious to see his runs and scoring or his average with runs and scoring position, because I just remember, similar to Matt McClain, we talked about a couple weeks ago. I feel like every time Lowe came on base. Or came to the plate, there were like three men on and he would just drive them all in. It was like a double, three runs. It was like automatic. It was crazy. But yeah, it was something like, it was definitely over 330 or something like that.
Yeah, I seriously question if Johnny DeLuca is going to be taking it at bats from Josh Lowe.
It's a good point. Yeah, this is why we do this. It's a little deep dive and I'm learning, I'm tweaking things along the way. So those are really good points. Brian Reynolds, Christian Yelich on the safe side, would you say?
Brian Reynolds is that guy that's 6th, 7th round every year, just undervalued, just not really a fist pump when you draft him, but a lot of really good fantasy players take him every year and get rewarded for it. Pittsburgh's lineup's improving. The guy is just 25 homers, 15 steals, 270, 85, 85. Pretty boring, but boring is good. And Yelich, not as boring, but I think he's getting slept on again. I think we got him in the 7th or 8th round last year, and for putting up the year he did staying healthy with the steals, he's pretty, the profile's interesting. I think you're looking at possible 25, 30 steals with a ton of runs, not a lot of RBIs, and the homers are a little iffy. He's back to the ground ball days of Christian Yelich. So kind of, what do you need? Do you need speed? Do you need runs, or do you need power and batting average? So I don't know what a kind of team context, I guess.
Yeah, standard Roto and just NFBC drafts. His ADP really fluctuates. It's all over the place. I've seen him drafted in the 90s. I've seen him in the low 60s. So it's just really a matter of, you need some stolen bases and runs and just somebody that won't kill you across the board. He's probably a pretty solid for that. He's just a better fit in OBP leagues, in points leagues, in underdog. He's like a third round pick, right? Because he just fits the model over there. But obviously a really solid pick as well. I always am a little concerned about the health. He did play 144 games last year, 632 PA, so just fine. And really, that's about it in that range. I do have Seiya Suzuki. He's got an ADP of around 100, 105, but I have him in with this group. I'm a big fan. Just bullish on the Chicago Cubs this season. And in fact, so bullish on that offense that I might actually be into Ian Happ and might draft that dude for the first time.
I think we'll get to him here in the next couple of tiers. Is there a scenario you'll take Kyle Schwarber, or is it just a complete pass because the batting average floor?
It's hard. It has to be the perfect roster construction. And it's one where you're already kind of light on, where you're heavy on batting average already. I think Acuna would be like a good fit with him. If you have Acuna and Harrison, a pitcher, couple more pitchers, whatever, like that's a good scenario for him. And you have stolen bases. I think that's the best fit, but there are a lot of scenarios where he doesn't fit, where it is kind of a dangerous pick. So I think I'm just not targeting him and Nico Horner. I think that's what I wrote in my article. You got Acuna and then Horner for more stolen bases, and then Schwarber with no stolen bases really. And then the low average, it could work out. I don't know.
Yeah, Schwarber just keeps falling in the drafts I'm in. So he just, it's so tempting. You got 40 homers and 100 plus runs, 100 RBIs. Mm-hmm. But that batting average, man, it drags you down. 197 last year. That is Joey Gallo-esque.
And again, second rounder in underdog. So that's just completely different animals, different formats. Ladies and gentlemen, the MLB draft season, it's here. And the easiest place to play fantasy baseball is at Underdog Fantasy. Fantasy baseball drafters are, we've been quite active in their best ball format fantasy drafts, where you draft a 20-round team of hitters and pitchers, and the best score from the team you drafted becomes your score for each week of the MLB season. The drafts, they're constantly filling up. Go to Underdog right now and draft a dinger. It's only $10 to enter. You get a share of your of $750,000 in prizes. The first place being a cool $100K. The tournament closes soon, March 28th. It's coming up in about a month from now. So sign up for Underdog, use that promo code FTN, and get your first deposit matched up to $100. Again, use that promo code FTN and join Underdog today and get drafting for this amazing, awesome upcoming MLB season. Round 7 to 10, who are your favorites, your standouts? Got guys like Castellanos, Teoscar Hernandez, veteran Lane Thomas at this point. Now, he's a veteran, I guess, technically. George Springer, a super veteran. He's in his creeping closer to 40 than 30 at this point. And then you got the kids, Jordan Walker, Jack Centurio, Evan Carter. And then you got the speed demon, Asturio Ruiz. And then finally, Anthony Santander, boring old Tony. I don't think anyone calls him Tony. So that's the group. What do you think?
Guys I like in it are, I guess, more of the older, boring guys. Castellanos, it feels like you can write in 100 RBIs for him in that lineup. The swing and miss is going up a little bit, but that lineup is so good, and he just drives in runs. Teoscar, I think, is going to start getting some helium in that Dodgers lineup once they kind of get some spring training rockets on TV. Lane Thomas is interesting. Man, the second half he had last year, if you had him, he was probably one of the most fun players to own, because every day he was getting a homer and a steal, it felt like. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Santander is actually pretty interesting to me. I think there's a good chance that he gets first base eligibility this year. I think he did at the end of last year. And that just adds value to him. You're writing in 90 RBIs, 25 to 30 homers, and just an incredible lineup, and a guy that nobody's really interested in.
By the way, on our FTN bet side, guys like MLB Dream, Adam Rosenberg, these guys are talking. These guys made a killing on the Rays last year, just like we did in fantasy baseball. And you know, the Rays just ran insane on the field, starting off undefeated, and the great fantasy value that transcended throughout the whole season with guys like Paredes and Lowe, who are really cheap. On the MLB, on the FTN bet side, these guys are looking at the, you know, the schedules. They're already looking like, you know, April bets. It's like, it's insane. But one of the things that we talked about, because we kind of both noticed the same thing when we were looking at early season schedules, Baltimore's schedule is out of this world. And I think the odds have moved a little bit on it for, like, for the division title, and then you know, for the pennant and for some other things. But like, if, just do me a favor, I won't go into detail on it, but just, you know, do me a favor, check out that Baltimore schedule. It's a little less enticing to try to do what we did with the Rays last year and say, oh, let me just get all the Orioles. They're all going to like blow up, because there are playing time concerns. There aren't, like, you know, some of these guys are expensive, you know, Adley Rutschman and whatnot. Gunnar Henderson is expensive. And then also it's just not, I don't know, there's something like less sexy about it. The ballpark isn't great. But I don't know. What do you think about that whole thing? I just stabbed it.
I got to dive into the schedules. That's the next thing on my to-do list. And, you know, where you're starting out for early, and you want to get off to a hot start. You don't want to dig any holes. So you want some good matchups. You know, I wonder out loud, you know, those San Diego, the Padres and the Dodgers with that two game, basically free look series you have. And is it, where are they playing? Is it Korea?
Seoul. Yeah.
Seoul which is, what is the value of that going to be? Does that add an extra round of value to these guys? When we're drafting main events or OCs before that, Because then you can see the stats and then bench them if they go for eight or something, or, you know, have a save or whatever. But yeah, I mean, there's something to early season schedule and really starting off hot and drafting those guys that can really kind of produce for the first even 2 to 3 weeks. And if you need to stream them out, stream them out.
Yeah. So just, I mean, because you got to hear this. So they open against the Angels. I mean, yeah, the Angels got some good pitching. Then over the next month, they have two series against the Royals, one against the Pirates, the Red Sox, and the Brewers. So the, and then the Angels again, and then the A's. So the only tough matchup they have series is against the Minnesota Twins. And hey, maybe they catch the bottom of that rotation. So that's interesting. How you, I don't think you thought it was going to be that good.
No, that's I want to place a bet for the first month wins, I guess.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's amazing. But like, there's still so much to shake out there with Jackson Holliday and all these guys. So we'll see. What, don't want to take up too much more time with that. Teoscar, I think's got 35 home run upside, big power guy, and that, you know, you can have like a 3,500 season and we wouldn't be shocked about it. And so I think he's a pretty good price. George Springer, I have a tough time investing with him. I feel like he is another guy we got lucky with like a full season of health last year. Santander, now that you talk about it and we're looking at the schedule, I'm like, maybe I need to consider him a little bit stronger. We don't really have him below ADP or anything. And then talk to me about Jordan Walker, because I've been kind of getting a little bit on that feeling of that he fits the mold of like the Josh Lowe, Bryson Stott to a degree, where the hype was so huge this time last year because he was just mashing homers like no tomorrow in spring training, and his ADP got all the way up to like 100-ish. And then he was fine. He had a mediocre season, but when you dig in, there are things to like. I think maybe the defense not as much, but could we have like a post hype situation, or are there some negatives about him we need to be concerned about?
The thing I don't like about Jordan Walker is the ground ball rate. He just drills the ball into the ground. He is like Vladdy before the breakout. Is he going to break out one of these years? Yes. The guy is immensely talented, but I don't like a guy that's playing out of position, trying to learn how to hit in the major leagues. Big body trying to play in the outfield. I think it's a recipe that's going to kind of limit him for at least this year. He might break out next year, but I am not drafting him this year. A quick question for you real quick, jumping back to Teoscar. As a Dodgers fan, is there any chance of him platooning?
I think it's a pulled for defensive reasons towards the end where he doesn't get his full five at bats. But I mean, there'll be times when the Dodgers have like, they're just lapping, you know, just like they're just winning like, you know, 12-0. And some of these guys are going to get, they're not even going to get to their six at bats technically, because they'll just bring in, you know, Kike Hernandez will come into the lineup and, you know, whoever. Bring in Austin Barnes because it's already game over. But yeah, I mean, there are, like, in his profile, I think there are some platoon concerns, and the Dodgers can get away with that sort of thing. But man, a bat like that in the lineup, and you get him out of Seattle where he just always has had a problem hitting, and you just kind of lock him into this like amazing lineup. And plus, Max Muncy, by the way, he's got a hand issue now. You know, Teoscar is going to be right in the thick of that. It should be lovely.
I love the Kiki Hernandez reference. The prodigal son's come home again, right?
Dude, it's made to be. And I actually just drafted him, I think, in the 39th round or something like that. Hey, three positions of eligibility. I could play him against lefties when I need to.
It's a great pick.
Yeah. So, I mean, Jackson Chourio, Evan Carter into the kids.
I'm fading the kids in this tier. Chourio, his minor league numbers are absurd, but I there's too many question marks for me to go spend a top 10 round pick on somebody like that. I know there's going to be somebody that even takes him earlier. I would probably not take him until after round 11 or 12. So really just not in the cards for me. It's kind of a wait and see rather than, you know, draft and hope. And then yeah, Carter, you already said, can't hit lefties. So no, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. I'm in the same boat. We have Evan Carter lower than his ADP, probably should be lower than where we have him at, but I mean, yeah, I mean, the 120s, 130s, that just doesn't make sense to me. I know he had a nice playoff and talented and all, but yeah, just really, really bad against lefties. And I do think they'll be platooning him some. Jackson Churio, by the way, I've seen him go like around a pick 100 in OCs or in the low, like the 90s. It's just crazy to me. That's just too much of an upside. You take too many of those risks and you've got yourself a real problem on your team because you're now expecting every single one of those upside guys to hit. And just, I don't know, baseball just doesn't work like that.
No, there's a learning curve when you get to the major leagues.
All right. Asturio Ruiz, got to be a perfect fit or just a full avoid?
Not a full avoid, surprisingly. I actually drafted him in my DC CLQ. I drafted Rutschman early for the catcher at bats and then a couple other hitters without the speed. And he was sitting there in round 9, and it just made a lot of sense to me. And if he can hit 10 to 12 homers instead of 3 to 5, I think it matters. And he seems like he's on the improvement. His minor league track record was hitting over 300 every year. There is some minor intrigue, but overall not going to be a target unless it's specifically team needed.
Yeah, Asturio Ruiz, I would draft in the right position. I know there was some concern about him losing playing time there towards the end of the year last season, but there really is no reason for them to just not let him do his thing. He's obviously elite on the base paths, and he could, yeah, I mean, he would have basically stolen more bases than Acuna had he not kind of slowed down the stretch as far as playing time. But I think he was only 6 stolen bases behind. Just stole like 67 bags. It was just insane. And he's not a zero in the power. He can hit 8 to 10 home runs, absolutely. But it's just weird when a guy can like steal more bases than give you RUD or RBI. It's just kind of a weird category, but it does have to be a right fit. The round 11 pocket, there's some interesting guys here. You got big power from Jorge Soler. Will he be the first guy? Let me ask you, San Francisco Giant fan. Will he be the first San Francisco Giant since Barry Bonds 20 plus years ago to hit 30 home runs for the Giants?
I think I'm going to go with VDP and take the under. I think VDP has him at 29 home runs. Yes. Is that accurate?
Yes. And that's not just like a, you know, like a gut call, whatever. I mean, those are like, that's the legit formula base. That's what we have.
I think he's got the power to do it. Right-handed power actually plays in San Francisco. I'm worried about the injury history. If he, you know, pulls an oblique, he's out for a month or whatever it is. He hasn't been healthy every season. I believe if I had to make a bet, I would say the under on 30 home runs on Soler.
And then we've got this next, the guys in this group. We talked about Ian Happ here there for a minute, Riley Green, and then there are three guys that I originally was not a huge fan of, but then as I dug in for my Outfielder Tiers article, I was like, okay, there's something here, and that's Jaron Duran, who now his helium's off the chain. I mean, like to be the projected leadoff man, at least against righties for the Red Sox. He's really hyped. TJ Friedl, who again is another guy I dug into a little bit more and was like, okay, he's not as bad against lefties as I think. I think people get too hung up in the fact that he had like, what was it, more home runs than he had barrels last year. But there aren't many guys that can, you know, have a 10% plus walk rate on the Reds. Pretty much is going to be good to lead off against at least righty. So I don't hate Friedl. And then Cedric Mullins, by the way, I noticed something about him. Like, I understand he's declining. He's not running, I don't think, as much, but like the dude was on track for like Jonah Heim type RBI. Like he had like 74 RBIs and like less than 500 or 500 ish plate appearances. Like he would have not be flying under the radar. No, it was 74 RBI in 450 plate appearances. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, that goes back to that Baltimore lineup just producing runs, right, and getting better.
Sorry.
I was just gonna say, Vlad, I miss the days of getting Jaron Duran in the 13th, 14th round of the DCs. He is cemented in round 8 by now.
Yeah,
that guy, he is the helium of the draft right now, and a good reason. A lot of good skills. There's a little concern about a platoon issue against lefties, but there's a 30 35 home run up or stolen base upside with some decent power at the top of a good Red Sox lineup. So the helium is real, and that cost is severe now, as far as, and probably going to get even higher.
Yeah, it is. And I'm going to continue. I'm just going to continue to fade is what it is. I made my bed. I'm lying in it. I think that he's not going to hit against lefties. I don't know what the whole we're going to trade him to the Padres thing was all about earlier in the year. I think he's got injuries that creep up here and there. I think he had something minor in the preseason. He was out for a while last season. He's kind of streaky, goes hot and cold. And then he had a massive BABIP. It was basically a 381. So he was one of those guys where also the XBA was a lot lower. So he's one of those guys. He needs to be really good to hold that spot, because there's so much talent on the Red Sox lineup that they will get someone else in there to lead off. So at this point, I'm in too deep now. I got no Duran. So if I lose because of him, so be it.
Hold strong.
Jazz McCormick, sneaky accountant, getting it done. He's going to get everyday plate appearances for the Astros. And at first I wasn't loving it. I was just looking, I was like, man, this guy's not going to hit 20, you're not going to go 20-20 again, but he's sneaky, man. He gets it done, gets your taxes done quick.
His numbers are sneaky. And if you know about the accountant, because I think the NFBC updated his profile picture.
Nice.
Which is a little disappointing, to be honest. I always enjoyed clicking that and pulling it up. But he's finally going to get a chance to play every day in Houston. The skills are actually pretty decent for a guy that finally getting an opportunity. And he's going to have a decent batting spot, probably batting sixth or seventh, which is not ideal, but a lot of good people in front of him. He can run. He has some power, plays good defense, which is going to keep him in the lineup. But there's some interest there for me.
Yeah, I think he's one of those, he fits that profile of just like a not a sexy pick. Like a lot of the Astros are like that. Like outside of Yordan Alvarez, nobody on the Astros, for whatever reason, is ever, even though they're always scoring among the most runs in the majors, they're just like not crazy, a team to crazy go after. So I like that. I like Riley Green on the Tigers, obviously not the best hitter's park. And then, of course, he dealt with the Tommy John surgery on his right elbow in September. But he bulked up over the last few months in the midst of recovery. He was hitting the ball harder than ever last season. He had an 11% barrel rate, 47% hard hit rate. Lifted the launch angle into the low to mid double digits. Got torque there. It's not the best situation, but for the price, I like him. And I mean... over like give me put it like this give me Riley Green in the 11th over like Spencer Steer right now in his 27 positions of eligibility but no real job going in like the 8th. Like, come on.
Yeah. Is there any concern at all about the Tommy John surgery coming back hitting? Hitters, maybe it's a fallacy that they've struggled coming off of that, but I can't get it out of my mind that there might be a little bit of a slow start because of that.
Yeah, it could be. I guess something we'll keep in track of in spring training. Like reading the quotes seems like it's not bothering him. And I think it's one of the reasons why his price is where it is. I feel like he would be closer to the Evan Carter range, the Springer range, like 130s. But he could get there. We'll see what happens this season. I'm sorry, in the spring, rounds 13 to 15, these are guys going like 200 to 230 ADP. A lot of decent names here. Actually, I have three names where, it's Brandon Nimmo. Let me just tell you the names first. Brandon Nimmo, James Outman, and Christopher Morel. These are guys that actually have ADPs in the top 200, but we have them just like a little bit out. And not for any particular reason. It's just a lot of positions there. But Brandon Nimmo, leadoff for the Mets. Any of these guys that you're interested in? Morel, obviously, is getting some of that helium.
Yeah, there's a lot I like in this tier. Starling Marte, I think, is a little undervalued. If he starts the season healthy, I think he's a guy that can give you good batting average and get some steals to really kind of jumpstart you in that category. You got Morel, who is just extremely exciting. If the profile is all over the place. A lot of strikeouts, a lot of homers, a lot of steals, a lot of errors. Will the Cubs commit to him? And then Outman, I'm a little concerned about the lefty splits. I had him last year. He was a 30th round pick or a reserve round pick in the auctions, and he really helped me out. But I'm more interested to talk Tyler O'Neill, and I'm going to give you about 15 minutes to kind of go on your Vlad forum, and let's go.
I don't need to oversell him. I mean, everyone knows what Tyler O'Neill is, and he's a guy that is a huge muscular dude who has only really had one good season and been nothing but injured ever since. And, you know, accused of dogging it last year on a single play that I think was blown a little bit out of proportion. And manager didn't play him all that much. And yeah, I mean, these guys that are big and muscular, like it's tough to be all in on somebody like that. Like he's just kind of fits that mold of like, if it all happens, like it's going to go really well. And especially like with this team and you know, the ballpark and the team context and the speed, he's a, you know, big sprint speed guy, power, everything is there, just needs to put it together. I mean, he's always the first one there. He was like the first one in camp, like a week earlier than anybody. He's like ready to go. The guy wants to compete. He wants to win, but how will his body hold up? Like, I just thought it was funny because we go back to like the Judge thing and how you guys used to make fun of me when I told you that year of his breakout. Oh, Judge is starting to do yoga. I think that's really good for him. It's going to kind of get him, you know, leaner, stretch him out a little bit, maybe less like muscle cramps and issues and, you know, tears or, you know, strains or whatever. And, you know, it's still a little anecdotal, but there was definitely an element of yoga. I'm convinced it helped him. I looked up Tyler O'Neill just to see, like, you know, dig in a little bit more. Turns out he is doing yoga, but guess what? He's been doing it for the last 2 years. so much for that help.
I think the fresh start is huge for him because Ollie Marmol hated him. Actually, he hated a lot of his players. So that's a whole other conversation for a different day, but I'm interested in O'Neill as well. A couple other guys I like. Nemo kind of shocked me having 43 barrels last year. I don't think of him as a power hitter, but 48% hard hit rate. He had
really,
almost a 10% barrel rate. The power actually was pretty legit. I thought of Nemo as, you know, he's going to score 100 runs, hit 12 homers, and no speed. But that was interesting. The power metrics actually kind of backed him up. And then Yoshida, Masataka Yoshida, his first half was really good, and I was invested in him. But he really fell off the second half. I don't know if that was some narrative about being away from home. I just read an article. He had jaw surgery to release some of the stress, but you're talking a guy with a legit hit tool. I have him projected for a .289 batting average. So if you need some batting average help here, I mean, it's hard to find batting averages late with some pop and a good lineup. So he's another guy I'm interested in.
Yeah. And for that reason, because he's not producing projected for an exorbitant number of home runs, he doesn't really run, but he's going to DH full time. Batting average is a gem, and especially you can get it that late, and most likely you probably need it unless you're like really into it. But I'm still tripping out about Nemo because I thought I knew everything about every player, but here I am looking at it, setting a career high in exit velocity, a career high in barrel rate, 9.5%, and holy schmoly, 48% hard hit rate for Nemo. I knew he hit 24 bombs, but like, geez, yeah, I'm overlooking it.
I'm here to help, Vlad.
Thank you, man. This is great. That's why, hey, that's why we're together. Stephen Kwan, John Fish special. Shout out to John Fish. Do not know if he listens, but hello, John. You love Stephen Kwan. I thought I loved Stephen Kwan. You really love Stephen Kwan. But what sort of love? He's kind of had a down season last year. His price has fallen. Instead of going around 130, he's now going like 220. Seen a little tiny bit of helium, but he's a perfect fit for a team that's solid in power. This is a guy that can hit 300. This is a guy that can steal 25 plus bases and it's going to score a bunch of runs. So I think I'm in.
I think you and Fish are drinking too many high noons.
I don't think I think I maybe had one in my life, but I might start
they're
now.
They're really good. But Stephen Kwan had a 1.1% barrel rate That yeah. makes Luis Arraez look like a power hitter. 19% hard hit rate. I guess if you need batting average, but you're talking four homers on a season and some little speed. He's going to hit at the top of the lineup, so he's going to get some runs. But I don't see any. I don't understand why he's even going this high.
Oh, why he's going that? Yeah, because of those three categories. Because I don't know. I feel like there's more things than like we make exceptions for certain players in the right spots, even if they do have the low barrel rate. I think I do. Sometimes we'll make an exception for somebody if it's like a good roster construction fit. But obviously, you know, like an extreme case, like if you have Esteri Ruiz or you have Nico Horner on your team, you're not going to take on another sub 10 home run guy, or otherwise you're really in trouble, or you're going to be chasing batting average sinks like Eugenio Suarez. So you don't really want to do that. But yeah. I will give a little, little teaser. Our editor, Daniel Kelly, at FTN, he's actually a published author. He's got a series of books out, and is a really good author. A really good writer and good editor, of course. But he also was like one of the main editors over at PFF for a while on the football site. But he occasionally does some like fun novelty baseball related articles, and he's actually working on something really cool. He's compiling. This will be out by the time you hear the podcast, but it's going to be an article about, he did this whole study. What if there were no such thing as trades in Major League Baseball and what those rosters would look like? And it's sick. So I saw the preview of it. You guys will see it, but it's like if, you know, there's no ever trade. I didn't even know some of the guys that were drafted by these teams. Like, you know, it's funny. So you'll see that come out. But my whole point and my whole spiel here is the other thing he's going to write in a few weeks is he's compiling a list of like the best fantasy team names for, you know, to name your fantasy team. And I had a whole bunch, and most are misses because I'm not really funny. But the one that everyone loved was "Stop Looking at Me, Kwan."
That is a pretty good one. I'm a fan.
All that I said just to, you know, for that punchline. So don't, improv guy.
I will say his 96% zone contact rate is screaming bright red on my spreadsheet. So that is one. I don't know how you only miss 4% of pitches that are in the zone in a major league hitter. That's impressive.
Well, who else in this range? I mean, let's talk real quick. A couple other guys, Taylor Ward, my last year's fail. And then Jared Kelnick, who will he be drinking some of that Braves Kool-Aid, or will he inject them with poison and make them suck?
I think they're both worth the risk at their draft cost. Kelnick's going to hit at the bottom of the lineup, maybe sit against some tough lefties, but they say they want him to play every day. That Braves lineup, they have some special juice where they're helping guys get better, and maybe without the pressure on him, he'll be even better. He actually wasn't half bad last year. So there is some interest there. And Taylor Ward, I don't think you were that far off on last year's Yelich. I think the injury really threw him off. The skills are there. He's going to, I think what I'm reading, bat six, though, which is a little concerning, but I'm still interested in both those guys.
I am interested to see where he ends up, because I don't think anyone did you read it? Is it like a manager quote, or is this on one of the playing time sites? Because I've seen him move.
Yeah, okay. Okay,
that changes. Yeah,
and that's until Rendon feels like he doesn't want to play anymore. So then he'll move up. So,
yeah, which is that? Which is never
2 weeks, maybe.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. That. That'll be enough. And then I don't know. He fits. He's a good. Are they going to play Nolan Chanel is going to be the number two hitter, at least they say earlier. I mean, that guy's a big contact guy. He's going to be good.
He's but Luis Rengifo, a first baseman.
Works. But Luis Rengifo is not a lock. I don't think he's a lock to hit first. It's not about that him not being a lock. It's he's not quite healthy. Hopefully he'll get there. He should be fine by opening days, already starting to get back out there. But I mean, he's pretty solid. By the way, Rengifo and the four positions of eligibility, does that make you want to draft him anymore, especially leadoff man?
Not in a fab league. It doesn't. In a DC, I'd push him up around just because of eligibility. It's like having four players. But in a fab league, I would take him in the right price. But at the ADP, seems a little high. And I'm another manager speak was that Mickey Moniak is possibly leading off against righties, which is interesting because his OBP is terrible. But they're trying to get some
lead off bombs. Skills.
Yeah, lead off bombs. That guy passes the eye test for me. I like him, but this underlying numbers do not like Moniak as much.
Yeah. He's like a DC pick anyways. I don't think he's going to really get there in 15 team leagues, but yeah, we'll be streaming them for sure this year. There will be times where it's like just the perfect matchup of, for him to just crush it. But yeah. Him against, that's a good, top of the lineup platoon because Renjifo is, much better against lefties. And then Moniak crushes the righties. They're all just keeping it warm for Zach Neto anyways. Zach Neto's going to get there.
Ninth hitter for the Angels, powerhouse.
Yeah. It's happening. Jung-Hoo Lee, I like. It's really rare for me to like a giant, but I mean, I think most people do. I feel like he's just a little underpriced, and the fact that he got a little dinged up in camp is kind of impacting his price just a little bit. But I've got him a couple rounds ahead of ADP. Who knows, by the way, who knows how much he's going to steal? Just because he didn't steal a lot in KBO doesn't mean he's going to, I mean, he's got the speed. He's fast. I think he will be given a green light. So I think he can steal 15 plus and no one's talking about it.
I think his nickname is Grandson of the Wind. So he better be able to steal.
Is it?
But his dad's name was Son of the Wind, I guess.
Oh, wow.
But Bob Melvin loves to run as his manager tendencies. I don't have any Jung-Hoo Lee as even a Giants fan. I'm more of a wait and see. I don't think the upside is enough for me to pull the trigger with the unknown. I could be missing out, but there's just other guys I like better in the area.
Yeah, for me, I like the profile of a top of the lineup guy that's going past pick 200 that can run and that can just score a bunch of runs. I mean, obviously hitting first on the Giants isn't the same as hitting first on the Dodgers, but still, I mean, that's still something. That's still a guy that can project for 85, 90 plus runs and probably 3.5 category contributor. So I'm in on that. You like Dalton Varsho. What do you like about Dalton Varsho?
I think he's kind of a last year's darling. The shine's worn off, but he's going to hit in the middle of the Blue Jays lineup. You're looking at steals, runs, RBIs, home runs with a bad batting average. I think losing the catcher eligibility, kind of people turn their other way on him, kind of similar to MJ Melendez. But I actually think he's a decent hitter and with a really good lineup context opportunity to be driving in runs at the cost. I mean, at pick 209, it's... I really do like it.
Jack Suwinski, the Pirates. I mean, he was he was really solid for most of the season. If you just kind of forget the batting average suck that he was, but he had some like monster week. So he was one of those. We don't want to use the term league winner, but he was one of those. I'm forgetting what it is, but he was really key in underdog contests. He like helped win people weeks because his production was really concentrated over certain weeks. And, you know, at the end of the day, 32% strikeout rate, 224 batting average, bad. But in only 530 plate appearances, he hit 26 homers. He stole 13 bases on only 15 attempts and drove in 74 runs and like in basically kind of part-time work. So it's kind of like a little bit of a balance here and there. So I don't know what to make of Jack Suwinski.
He was the streakiest guy in Major League last year. When he was good, he was a top 5-round pick good, but when he was bad, he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. If you can time that right, he's a great player to have, but you cannot draft him, think you're going to start him every week.
Yeah, he hit a .185 in June, and then .250 in July, and then .130 in August. And then .290 in September. That's just going by month. If you were to go by 2 weeks at a time, you'd really kind of drill down. That'd be interesting. Other guys like that, like other platoon bats in this area. Kerry Carpenter, lefty bat, hits righties in Detroit, not the best ballpark. What other platoon guys we have around here? Max Kepler is not supposed to be a platoon guy this season, although he'll probably hit lower in the lineup against lefties. and then Nelson Velasquez. Don't know how much playing time he's going to get for the Royals. And then Parker Meadows, leadoff man for Detroit, or so it seems. Austin's little brother, probably only going to hit against righties. I don't know what they'll do against him, against lefties, but any of those guys intrigue you?
Kepler's interesting. You have the VDP is much higher on him than the ADP. What do you like so much about Kepler?
So Kepler, I mean, I don't know. He's just been really good over the last couple seasons. Hit the ball harder than ever before in 2023. Had like a 12% barrel rate. He's pretty solid as far as the walk rate is concerned. We've even seen him not be quite the batting average killer that he used to be. He used to be kind of like a 220, 240 guy. Now he's hitting kind of 260 over the last couple of years, even higher XBA, which was kind of interesting. And, you know, I'm just looking at a guy that can hit 20, 25 homers with 150 plus run RBI in a fantastic team context. And that's as if everybody is healthy. But between Julien and Byron Buxton and Royce Lewis and Wallner and Correa, I mean, this is already a team that's produced top 10 runs last season and won their division. And just, I don't know, I just have a feeling on Kepler. And this is a guy that I've never, ever drafted. And in fact, went out of my way to make sure I never drafted. So I don't know what it is, this kind of like reverse flip.
I mean, I think you just sold me on him. The 12% barrel rate, 47.5% hard hit rate, 90% zone contact. There's a lot of stuff to like there. I thought he was turning into more of a platoon bat, but it looks like... he's, like you said, going to play every day, might move down the lineup against lefties, but that's not a bad lineup to be a part of. And against righties, if he hits near the top, that could be a huge value pick.
A couple other guys that aren't big on the power, but could produce in other areas. One is Sal Frelick for the Brewers, who he got manager Craig Council's love last year and pretty much was inserted fifth in the lineup on his first day in the big leagues, and then was hitting fourth for a while, which is pretty impressive. Just kind of stick a rookie in the middle there, especially one that isn't exactly a power monster. But I don't know. I do like Frelick. I do know he's been playing a little bit on the infield. I don't know how much time it'll take him. It'll take a while, I think, for him to gain other eligibility. But I'm interested in him. I like Brendan Donovan a lot. Donnie Dingers, second base outfield eligibility, hasn't played second base in quite a while. I think him leading off against righties against a St. Louis lineup that I think will be much better than last year. So yeah, those are a couple other guys like you.
Yeah. I think Marmol came out and said Donovan's our everyday second baseman this year. So mm-hmm. That's a nice little vote of confidence. Leody Taveras is an interesting guy for me. Texas's outfield feels just a little bit crowded, but if Taveras plays every day like he did last year, I mean, you're looking at 15 homers, 15 steals, 70 runs, 70 RBIs. But with the two kids, Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford, with Adelis, how do you see that outfield playing out? Do you think he is their everyday center fielder?
I think so. I mean, I want to know what happens with Langford. Like, if over the next couple of weeks, will obviously be quite clear to us if he's going to be a part of this team. It looks like he's going to be, but we'll see. I think Leody could end up in a platoon. I think it's absolutely possible. He's, you know, switch hitter. He's only 25. He was pretty darn good in the first couple of months of the season, and then kind of slowed down a little bit. I remember because I got crap for recommending him to be a sell, and I was, you know, in a rare case was right about it, but it was just because he was just so good. Over those first couple months, it just didn't seem sustainable. But I mean, for where he goes, the price, you're talking like in the 300s, doesn't matter. I don't care if he's hitting ninth, if that lineup is happening, and especially if like maybe guys like Heim and Langford are hitting around him, if that's going to be how it's going to shake out, that's a good batch. That's going to be a very productive 7, 8, 9. So I'm not opposed. And hopefully I didn't jinx the Rangers earlier.
Did you read that article on Wyatt Langford about he almost got called up for the World Series when Adelis got hurt? That was some incredible praise from that team. I think Scherzer said he was the best hitter on the team, and that's with Corey Seager on there. I don't know what to do with Wyatt Langford, and we kind of passed over him earlier, but there is some serious unknown there that I need to dig into, because if he's playing every day and Evan Carter's platooning with Tavares and Adelise is in right field, then, you know, Tavares is way down my board. But if he's not, then Tavares is way up. So I think it's a lot hinging on the kids.
I mean, it's why Langford is the best prospect in baseball. Him and Churio are supposed to be the next big thing. So, eventually, I mean, is this going to be like the only year that he has an ADP in the hundreds? Probably, right? Because next year, for all we know, he could be a third rounder. So there's something there. There's something intriguing there. We'll see what happens with his price. But right now, like taking him in the 10th, I think, if I don't know where he's going now, 9th, 10th versus Churio in the 7th, 8th. I mean, you know, kind of give me the discount. And you can't have them all. You can't take all. We're talking about a lot of guys that you can't take Jazz Chisholm with Tyler O'Neill. And, you know, O'Neill Cruz is your shortstop, or, you know, and then you take Langford and sure, you can't build fantasy teams like that. It just doesn't work.
I guess I lost one of my OCs then.
A couple other guys here that we'll wrap things up here pretty soon. I touched on briefly on Nelson Velasquez. And I think the one concern here with, I mean, obviously, I think if you remember, there was like nobody in his small sample that hit the ball harder. It was insane. I mean, he hit 17 homers in just 50-ish games with like a 50% hard hit rate. His like barrels per plate appearance percentage was basically just him and Judge at the top of the league. But again, it's a very small sample, but these big power guys are like Brant Rooker, Matt Wallner, Nelson Velasquez. They're all intriguing. The problem with Velasquez is he will not be in the outfield pretty much. They already have a crowded outfield. And if Freddie Fermin is good like he was last year, they're going to want him behind the plate more. Let Sal Perez play more DH, you know, maybe some first if Vinny isn't ready, but that doesn't leave room for Velasquez. He could literally be in AAA despite being a 30 home run type guy.
Yeah. There's a ton of power, a ton of hard hit, but yeah. Is it Fermin or Fermin? Did we figure that one out?
Oh, that's a good question. We thought about it last week. And you know, what's funny is we did do some pronunciation practices before the podcast. We just got to give you the kind of little peek behind the curtain, and we've both been butchering, but so that you all know that we have been trying and we'll do better next week.
We try. that's all that matters. Another guy to touch on real quick, Jose Siri. He just came out and said he wanted to steal 30 bases this year. I don't know if you can steal 30 bases batting 200, but you're looking at a 20 homer, 20 steal guy that if he stays healthy can play quite a bit because his defense on Tampa Bay.
Yeah. I mean, Jose Siri was a guy that we, a few of us friends in the NFBC, like it was one of those things. It was a weird thing where we didn't talk about him in the preseason a lot. And then we like, whenever we saw each other, like after the draft, after the main event draft, or like at the break, we were looking at each other's boards. It was like, you drafted Siri in the 19th too? You drafted Siri in the 20th? It was funny. We just like all drafted him around the same spot and it pretty much worked out. But yeah, if he doesn't hit 200, if it's like 230, he's stealing his bags easy because he's fast. He can do it. And it was weird. We projected him for a lot of stolen bases last season and he kind of did the reverse. He hit a whole bunch of home runs and didn't steal as much. So, I mean, outside of like just getting on base very much, I feel like Siri could do kind of like whatever he wants. And he's going to play a lot because he's really good in the field. It's like a 95% range. Arm strength is top percentile. And then he's fast. Sprint speed's at 29.7, 98 percentile. So a lot to like about Siri, except for the average.
Yeah.
Let's finish up with the end gamers here. There are a whole mess of names in the 300 to 400, 450 range, the guys that we kind of want to finish things up in the draft with. Couple names I'll throw out there, and then maybe you do the same. But Giancarlo Stanton, I do have him much lower, below ADP. And I don't know, for the right fit, maybe in an OC where I can drop him and he's not expensive. But if he starts creeping in the mid-200s, I don't think I can do it. Sometimes we just kind of have to separate from the name and just realize it's kind of a little bit of a different guy. He's going to literally hurt you in batting average most likely and likely miss most of the season. So there's him. I think Johan Rojas is interesting because he's good defensively. He's going to play a lot for Philly. It's a good lineup. It's deep all throughout, and he's fast. So if you need some speed there towards the end, I think he's pretty solid. And then the Cincinnati outfielders are interesting as well. We'll see how all that playing time shakes out. But Will Benson, he was another high BABIP guy, I believe. But he is a, you know, 2020 type guy. And same thing with, what's his name? Jake Fraley. Wasn't he actually like a 2020 guy last year?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a little bit fluky, but definitely put up some good stats for the year. So it's an interesting group. I think Will Benson already leads the spring training in stolen bases. So throw that out there.
Okay.
But a couple other names interesting. I think Alex Verdugo is getting slept on. The skills are not much fun, but round 300 is an outfield 4-5. He's going to play every day until Jason Dominguez is back, which is, should not be till the middle of the year. In a improved Yankees lineup, like we talked about, Austin Hayes plays a lot because of his defense. I read something about Tommy Pham that he hasn't even got an offer yet in the offseason, wow, which I thought was pretty interesting and a little scary if you've been drafting him. Some other guys a little later, Harrison Bader, while he's healthy, is a good value to get some steals to start off. And then another guy down at the bottom, Edward Olivares, does he get a shot to play every day now that he finally got off the bus to Omaha from Kansas City? Pittsburgh traded for him, and so does he get a shot? And then the last guy, Mitch Haniger, he's just two years removed from being pretty effective in Seattle, so he's right back to where he was, and batting in the middle of that lineup.
Yeah, Harrison Bader is a good late-round speed guy. I mean, that's a really good price, like middle, what is it, round 23, 24. He's going to be playing a lot of center field. They're actually moving Nimmo to the corner, I believe left field, so that Harrison Bader can play their center field most of the time. So I'm into that. I don't think I've been getting in on him too much. I like the what was the guy that you just mentioned right before? Edward Olivares. I think Edward Olivares is going to play every day. It just, the lineup just, it doesn't make any sense. I know he's a big risk on the defensive side, and it doesn't matter. He just could just DH. He is projected, I think, bottom third of the lineup right now, but I think he's going to be hitting in the middle of that lineup. And yeah, sure, he'll sit against some righties, but he'll play against all the lefties, mashes lefties. He'll go look it up, and he can hit home runs and he can run. He's going to be like this year's Jake Fraley. Jake Fraley, I was wrong. He was not a 2020 guy. He hit 15 home runs with 21 stolen bases, but I think that's a pretty good comp on him, and he won't hurt you in average. He's actually a sneaky guy that can hit you like 280 plus. So I do like him. Do you think he'll play every day? Other than that, there were a couple other guys I wanted to mention. Lamont Wade, another giant. Really didn't think I'd go here, but I like Lamont Wade a lot. I do think he will also play every day. I do like the lineup context a little better now. So now if you're looking at some mix of, we know Junghoo Lee is going to be lead off, and there's going to be some combo of like Thairo Estrada, Wade, and Jorge Soler. I don't think that's that awful. I think it's one of the best first top half of the offenses that the Giants have had in a while. And then you got the kids. You got like Sudani Rafaela for the Red Sox. Will he, won't he make the team? We already know his teammate, Willier Abreu, is going to make the team. I think he's got 20 homer upside with like 10 swipes and won't hurt, can maybe not hurt the average. And then Pico Armstrong, I don't think he's going to make the team now at this point, but he will get there eventually and probably steal a lot of bases. So he's intriguing. And then last two guys I'll mention are a couple of Rockies. Brenton Doyle, who apparently is bulked up. And then I like Hunter Goodman. Right now, he's on the outside looking in, if you're looking at like roster resource or wherever else. So he was the hot guy literally a week ago. And now that everybody's drafting the heck out of Sean Bouchard, and most, you know, I haven't looked it up on Curlin's site, but you, in the last couple of days, but like Goodman is now showing to play in the minor leagues. And then all of a sudden I got him like 50 spots past ADP. I don't see it. I think Hunter Goodman's gonna be playing in that Rockies lineup pretty much every day. And I think he's like a 20 plus home run guy. So I think that's a steal too at the end round.
And he can play first base too for them, right? It's a good call.
Anyone else? Jock Peterson, Randall Grichuk, any of the guys I named?
A couple other ones. Garrett Mitchell. They seem like they want him to be the everyday center fielder in Milwaukee. So it could be value there. And then interesting guy, Willie Castro. I don't think he's starting to open the year, but the 33 steals last year on a team that only stole, I think, 50-something bases. If he gets some run, he will run. So that could really be a stolen base help. But if everybody's healthy, I don't think he has a spot to play.
Yeah, he's pretty flexible. I mean, he can play in the outfield. He can play in the infield, middle, corner. That'll work out well. A lot of it, we'll see how things go with Edward Julian. I think he's one of those really super polarizing guys because we know how bad he is against lefties, but you know, we're going to might probably get that chance against lefties, but then they got the veterans there. And then keep in mind, the Twins did just trade for Manny Margot. So I guess that's one more bat to worry about. And he's just going to play against, Margot's going to play against just lefties anyways.
He's this year's Michael Taylor, just the Buxton insurance when he gets hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good call. All right. That's pretty good, man. I think we did a pretty good one. We didn't take a whole 2 hours or anything. I guess let's just throw it out there. If you could just pick from these like post 300 guys, let's just the 300, 400 range, your three favorite outfielders. Do you have anyone off the top of your head?
In the box that you got, as far as the players we just talked about, I'd like Haniger a lot. I think the price is just not reflect the playing time. I think there's a good opportunity there. I like Harrison Bader, like we talked about, and then Olivares. I think if he gets a chance to play, I'm in for the shot. An easy drop if he doesn't.
Nice. I'm with you. I'm on board for Olivares, and again, it's a cheap price. So again, his ADP is like 450. So he's not even being taken in 30 teamers. 30 rounders. So I do like him and interested. I do also like Lamont Wade, just for, I feel like he's kind of just like safe and boring. And I think he's a 20 home run bat that isn't going to kill your batting average and play a lot, score a lot of runs. So I'm on board with that. And I'm just starting to have this little feeling that one of these Red Sox outfielders, I wish I knew which one. Obviously, Sedani Rafael is the bigger prospect, more talented, but I don't know. There's just sick. Maybe it's just the last name Abreu, but there's just something about this Willie or Abreu guy that I just like.
It sounds like they want to give Rafaela the job in center field or center field if he can handle it. So we'll see. But either one of them, whoever gets the job, will be interesting. I agree.
All right. That's pretty good. We'll do it. Oh, by the way, Sean Bouchard is really popular, really kind of like moving up the draft boards. And then at some point, someone's going to sign Eddie Rosario, right? Somebody's got to take him on.
I still can't believe how many free agents are out there. And it's not just the big names in Snell and Montgomery. We talked about Tommy Pham. You got Eddie Rosario. It's going to be challenging for these guys to walk into a spring training locker room, you know, 2-3 weeks in, when these guys are already mm-hmm. competing for jobs. Are they going to be welcomed with open arms when they're competing with other mm-hmm. guys for jobs? The dynamics are really interesting. And I don't think it's good for baseball having these guys sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah, let's get him signed. Let's just get it going already. A little dominoes starting to fall with the Bellinger signing, but now it's time to get everybody else in. Next week, we will dive into this starting pitcher realm. It's going to be quite a show. We might have even a guest, so we'll see. We'll let you know about that announcement next week. And that's really about it. Any last-minute thoughts, anything else here to close things out, Jason?
One other name to throw out there, Stone Garrett. On the Nats. I love the skill set. He started to produce until he got hurt last year. If he gets a chance, I think he's worth a late round flyer.
I'm in it. I'm in it to win it. I'm in it with Stone Garrett as well. So, and also forgive a little bit of my rambling. We got to try like a podcast sometime, maybe like earlier in the day, if our schedules can work it where our brains aren't like completely exhausted. So people listening in these mornings are like, dude, are these guys high or what? But no, I mean, not you, but me, but yeah.
Just high on kids, Vlad, both of us.
That's the life, baby. Kids, baseball, that's the best life. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. For my co-host, Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.